everyone. Welcome back to But Why the Podcast, a podcast where every week myself, Adrian, and Matt talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, we want to make sure that you know to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen. It is the easiest way to show us your support and help other people find us. And if you want to support us a little bit more, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/butwhythepc. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to But Why the Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And today we are covering A Pineapple Who Lives Under the Sea. Adrian?
What the fuck was that?
I just realized that.
We're covering A Pineapple Who Lives Under the Sea. Even Matt was like, the fuck is going on here?
Oh, God. We're covering SpongeBob. I'm just going to go with this. Adrian's leading the episode. I'm shamed.
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, I think I put this question in here, like, ironically, but I guess we do need it. Kate, can you tell me who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, okay, yeah, because he's the sponge, not the pineapple. Yeah, so we're covering SpongeBob today, and I couldn't think of like a question to ask other than that one, and then just simply, did you watch SpongeBob when you were younger? Do you still watch SpongeBob? Do you go back and live your nostalgia days, or just to kind of situate us in where we're at in our SpongeBob-dom?
SpongeBob-dom.
Yeah.
So you want my SpongeBob-dom?
Yeah. What's your SpongeBob-dom?
I tried it. I thought it was terrible. I still don't understand it. It's the most overrated show I've ever known to existence, and I still don't get it.
Cool. I mean, it's like your opinion,
where did
you
go from that?
I literally did. I've tried watching SpongeBob like on so many episodes, and people tell me all the time it's the greatest thing in the world, and I'm watching, I'm like, I don't get this. I don't see why people like this.
I think it won, like, quite a bit of awards.
No, I understand it's won a ton of awards and people love it. I just don't understand it.
Dope, Squidward. All right, Kate?
Yeah, so I remember when it first started airing. It was still when Mr. Stick was a thing. I don't know if you were, like, if you're listening here and you remember Mr. Stick, yes, because my brother does not remember Mr. Stick. But my brother watched SpongeBob more than I did. So I watched it a lot, like, by proxy. Like, hey, we're taking care of your brother, and this is on TV, so now you're gonna watch these episodes that you've seen a whole bunch, and your brother's gonna think it's the first time that it's ever been on. Because they ran a whole bunch of SpongeBob reruns. But, yeah, I like SpongeBob. I haven't watched it in years, like, years and years and years. But I definitely like it.
Awesome. I mean, I've watched SpongeBob like when it first came out. Those first three seasons, I think, are like some of like the best, like cartoonness that I've ever watched in terms of just like rewatchability and things like that. It's on Amazon Prime. Like the first like four seasons are on there. That's really all you need to watch. Anything past that really isn't that great. But
I don't even think I can distinguish seasons from like '90s cartoons.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of tell. Here, and we'll talk about that like a little bit into when we start talking about its creation and stuff, because there's a definite drop off, and it has a lot to do with people leaving and coming back and all this jazz. But the main reason why we're covering SpongeBob today is because its creator, animator, director of SpongeBob SquarePants, Steven Hillenburg, passed away on November 26, 2018, at the age of 57 from ALS-related complications, and he's actually the first creator of an animated Nickelodeon series to ever pass away. So it hit Nickelodeon pretty hard, especially since how big SpongeBob is to kind of their brand and all the people who watch SpongeBob that we'll go through. It was a pretty big loss, and I think deserves some of our attention for, you know, this hour and a half tonight. So in terms of like a brief history, I'm really just going to give you like a super brief history, because one of our but why those is Steven Hillenburg in and of himself, and his background is basically the creation of SpongeBob. So like there's going to be a history basically in one of our but why those. But unless you've been living under a rock, you probably know that SpongeBob SquarePants at least exists at the very least. You might not have watched shows depending on your age demographic, but you know it's a thing. Like, he's everywhere in everything for the last almost 20 years. So SpongeBob SquarePants, also referred to as just SpongeBob, is an American animated television series created by marine science educator and animator Steven Hillenburg for Nickelodeon. The series chronicles the adventures and endeavors of title character and his various friends in the fictional underwater city Bikini Bottom. The show premiered in May 1st, 1999, following the 1999 Kids' Choice Awards, and the rest is basically history, as it's still going on, and we are still getting movies to this day.
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand. I've tried the show. I love the memes that come out of all of this and the gifs that come out of the show. It's probably the only reason I care. But I've tried watching it a few times, and I feel like maybe I need to try again, because like he does have like a marine, he's with a marine science educator. I love, like, I watch a ton of cartoons and animated series, especially educational ones. I just don't get this one, and I've just never liked it out of all the times I did. I've watched it.
Hey, man, I didn't think. I would have been more surprised if you said that you liked SpongeBob coming into this episode.
I was like, I've watched like all the seasons and like twice of like Magic School Bus, even the new Magic School Bus, yeah, and all these other stuff, but I just don't get this one. I've tried.
We'll get into it. So we'll start off just right away with Steven Hillenburg to get started with, you know, Matt's sciencey mind and kind of how we even get SpongeBob to be a thing. So Hillenburg is the primary animator and creator of SpongeBob SquarePants in the very early days. When he was growing up, he had basically two passions, the ocean and drawing. And since drawing fish seemed boring, he decided to pursue his degree in marine biology, and he minored in art.
Oh, I thought he said drawing fish seemed boring and not drawing the ocean seemed boring.
I mean, if you just draw the ocean, like, there's just water.
Is it blue paper?
Some blue paper? Boom, done.
But fish are the boring one.
Hey, I'm not Hillenburg. Why don't get mad at me? Hillenburg's the one who said that drawing fish was boring. But after he graduated in the 80s, like the early 80s, he worked as a marine biologist and teacher at the Orange County Marine Institute. And even though he was, you know, teaching and he was doing a lot of outreach for the community, in 1987, he decided to go back to college to kind of pursue his passion in art and animating. So he got his degree in experimental animation at the California Institute of Arts in Valencia, and then he earned his master's in fine arts in 1992. So basically from 1993 to 1996, Hillenburg worked on and directed Rocko's Modern Life. For those of you who remember...
Was he primary on that?
He was one of the primaries, yeah. He has directorial credits on the first three seasons.
Now that is a show that I love to death, and still, like, if I think there was a time that it was on Netflix, it was at the time like Hey Arnold was on there and stuff, and I loved Rocko's Modern Life, which watching that as an adult was like, oh no, this was for children, which
it's
also
a lot darker.
Get with like SpongeBob sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's not like the creator or anything that of Rocko's Modern Life, but he definitely directed, and when it was canceled in 1996 is when he begins to start working on SpongeBob. He actually gets into, you know, working with Rocko's Modern Life basically from his thesis when he was in getting his master's. It's an award-winning thesis film about wormholes, and the creator of Rocko saw it and then brought him on through that process. So he was kind of there from about the beginning.
Matt, why don't you like SpongeBob?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying, by the way, what is that wormhole film? I've watched so many films on wormholes.
I knew I should have gotten the name of it.
I have no idea how many shows I've watched on particle physics and wormholes.
I think it's like literally like wormholes or something.
Well, you know how many different shows are called wormholes?
It was a thesis, though, so yeah, it might not have been literally called wormholes.
Lost
we literally
by
have
Steven Hillenburg.
Curiosity Stream, which is nothing but pretty much theses turned into films.
No, theses are like tiny, tiny little things. Yeah, this
once again, have you actually scrolled through the entire library?
Yes, looking for.
They
dogs.
Literally have 15-minute like shows.
Yeah, it can be found on YouTube. So I think you can find
Matt,
it on YouTube there,
it.
Matt. But it was they're at a film festival.
I'll link wormholes in the show notes, guys.
Yeah, that'd be great. So when Rocko's gets canceled, he didn't really think that he was going to be making, you know, like his own TV show, but one of the writers from Rocko's Modern Life encouraged him to expand on one of his previous works before he decided to get his master's. So many of the ideas and the stories that are from SpongeBob come from an unpublished comic book that he had in 1989 called the Inner Tidal Zone. And it basically is what he used to teach the public about the animal life in tide pools. So one of the writers on Rocko saw it, then encouraged him to go through and expand on those characters and make SpongeBob. And he basically wanted to move away from the kind of darker humored, you know, Rocko's Modern Life and like Ren and Stimpy.
Oh,
I love Ren and Stimpy. Does that count?
Ren and Stimpy is so bad.
Also, when you're like a kid with like your family of like a bunch of just suicidal people in a room watching Ren and Stimpy, I'm sure everybody loves it.
Oh, yeah. Me and my dad loved Ren and Stimpy so much. But Toastman nowadays? No, that man is
even
creepy.
My dad, I guess you want to call him, favorite show was Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, so like he worked on Rocko's Modern Life and obviously understands Stimpy, Ren and Stimpy, but he wanted to kind of move away from kind of those darker humor shows, and that's where we get kind of the lovable and innocent SpongeBob SquarePants, but is not devoid of some of like the darker humor from Rocko's Modern Life and even kind of Ren and Stimpy when you kind of go back and watch it.
Squidward delivers flowers to the grave of his hopes and dreams.
Yeah,
it's dark.
Yeah, lots of characters have such dark moments, and there's just so much comedy in it that's like going back and watching it again, even interactions between Patrick. Even Patrick says some just dark stuff that I'm just like, yo, Patrick, you need some help, my friend.
Patrick always reminded me of like one of those friends that you have that takes the joke too far, and that it just gets really, really dark, and nobody knows how to say anything after it. So,
yeah.
Matt.
So basically, like Hillenburg decides, okay, let's do it, let's go for it, and he fleshes out his characters in the intertidal zone, and there's like some character designs of it from like the early days, and it's kind of pretty similar to what we have in SpongeBob, and he just fleshes them out and makes them just more anthropomorphic and more friendly for an animated show instead of just like the comic book.
Matt, why don't you like a show that started off as the intertidal zone?
I don't know. I told you. I just don't understand this.
I feel like Matt is just very confused this episode.
Yeah. Quick fun fact. It was actually pitched as SpongeBob Ahoy.
SpongeBoy?
Yeah, SpongeBoy Ahoy. But the name SpongeBoy was already trademarked by a mop. So they just went with SpongeBob instead.
You want to hear a fun story about a mop?
Oh, this feels like it's going to go dark.
My mother argued with my entire family that we owned a mop, and we told her we did not own a mop, and she kept saying, yes, I do, and then we asked her, can you show us this mop, because she claimed she mopped all the time, and then when she got up in anger to show everybody, she realized we did not own a mop. So we have no idea what she was mopping or what she was mopping with.
Was it a Sponge Boy?
It could have been possible.
Hillenburg would stay on as showrunner from 1999 to 2004, but stepped away as director along with some of the original writers after the first feature film. And he reportedly did this because he wanted the show to end and kind of saw, like, everything. He thought that he did everything that he could with the show. And kind of overall, I think this is a pretty consensus with people who continue to watch it over the years. This is, like, where you see a little bit of the decline in the show without Hillenburg at the helm. I think because you lose a lot of the character moments in it. 2012 is when it was doing really, really bad, and even... They even came out and said that their ratings are dropped a whole bunch. I don't know why it kept going.
I'll say, so they had eight seasons of just trash?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
See, this could also be an issue, because me, like, I obviously saw maybe a few at the beginning, whatever, and then, you know, you try to come back in 2007, 2008, and you're like, this is awful.
Yeah, so those first three seasons is basically like where all the memes come from, where all of, like, the jokes come from. Are mostly from those first three seasons, with the exception of, like, the condescending SpongeBob one that's, like, from, like, season 10. But most of the good stuff comes from the first three seasons. But it would see a pickup in quality again in 2015 when Hillenburg would come back to work on the show and work on the second movie, which people enjoyed after just, like, years of just not great quality for the show itself. And this just really all spawns from a guy who wanted to draw fish and share his, like, love of the ocean with people, which I think is just, like, the best way to kind of come up with a show. Like, he didn't care really about the money. He wanted to just end after three seasons.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to draw fish and, like, make people laugh.
Matt, which I think why is don't you like wholesome. This?
I don't know. At the end, I'll give you a recommendation for other fish shows.
Yeah, so basically, you know, he recently died, so his ashes were actually scattered at sea earlier this week, which I think is super, super fitting, because here's a guy who loved the ocean and loved animating, and he had the chance to blend the two together and create a powerhouse of a show, and he was able to do it. Create a show that basically touched people's lives over, like, the last almost 20 years now.
All right, we're done. Cut it. Wrap it. You said the last
monologue. That's basically it. Yeah, so a little bit about Hillenburg and kind of his life. He was kind of, I mean, he wasn't super outspoken. There's not a whole lot about kind of like his life before he was really doing this. He's not an introvert by any means, but he just wasn't kind of like out there. He kind of just went day to day, did his work, and let his work speak for himself. Like you said, the series debuted in 1999, so we'll move on to kind of like how popular is SpongeBob and how has it been running for so long. So, in 1999, statistically, it's a success ratings-wise, and then not even just with kids alone. So, by 2001, after a couple seasons, of the 50 million people who watched it every month, 20 million of the audience was 18 to 34 in that range. So, a big chunk of the people who are watching it are not kids. And... with it in its 12th season currently, with over 240 episodes, it's accumulated 6 Annies, 8 Golden Reels, 4 Emmys, and 15 Kids' Choice Awards, if you care about how many of those there are.
See, I will say this. I completely forgot that seasons do that for animation. They're so long. Because I'm like, wait a minute. That's like almost 20 years. We only got 12 seasons. I forget that there's like, when are they, like 26 episode long?
I think like the first season has like 40 episodes.
Oh, they go 40? Because I know a lot of the other ones are like 26.
Yeah, it's like that late 90s Pokemon-esque thing where they have like super long seasons. But it's currently Nickelodeon's longest running show, surpassing Rugrats in 2012. So it's been the longest running show for a long time now. And currently all time with running shows, it's fourth behind The Simpsons, Arthur, and South Park. And the seasons are currently viewed in 170...
Hold on, is this only animation, and is this out of, like, what, is still running, or just overall?
Still running, okay, like, okay. Overall. Okay, yeah.
Because I was like, I'm pretty sure there's other shows that have been ran longer, but
currently running. And the seasons are viewed in 170 countries, speaking 24 languages. I only add this in here because I don't know if you ever watched SpongeBob in Spanish, Kate. But it is hilarious.
My best friend in high school, her family was from Mexico, and the little kids in her family were fluent in both English and Spanish. But they would watch all their cartoons in Spanish. So I have definitely heard SpongeBob in Spanish, and I love it so much.
It's pretty good. just to kind of show like the reach of it, 170 countries, 24 languages. That's a lot of a lot of countries and a lot of dubs to do.
That's a lot.
And past just the show, there are SpongeBob itself is like a huge medium. So you have two released movies currently, SpongeBob SquarePants movie in 2004, and then the more recent, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water. And then you have a third movie, the SpongeBob movie, It's a Wonderful Sponge, releasing in 2020.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, I didn't know about that one either.
That's weird a little bit.
Not really. People love nostalgia these days. We just reboot and do everything because love nostalgia.
I mean, they're not rebooting. It's still...
I'm not talking about like whether... I'm talking about they are rebooting things, but also they're just kind of bringing back and making more of the same movies that are over just because of nostalgia.
Well, I guess Adrian's point is like they're not really bringing it back. It's already... They're not bringing it around town. They're bringing it back, but
they're just doing another movie, whether it's still going super strong or not.
Like Dragon Ball Z.
It'd be interesting to see how it goes, especially because Hillenburg was basically the director of the previous two movies, and the previous two movies aren't bad when you talk about kind of like the animated world. So I'm interested to see how much work he got to do on It's a Wonderful Sponge before his passing, and how it's going to be received without him being largely involved. We also have lots of handheld video games. I tried to count the amount of handheld video games and console and PC games there are for SpongeBob, and it was too much to count, so I gave up.
Because people forget how many video games were made from like 1999 to like 2008 before all of a sudden everything got priced out.
So many Game Boy games for this franchise.
So,
I particularly was a big fan of the SpongeBob SquarePants movie game on Xbox.
I remember it, but never played it. But I remember, like, you know, we talked about on last week's episode of Stan Lee. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. Of those games, I started because I went back and checked like the Marvel games. Marvel was producing like 10 Marvel games a year, and all the way up to like 2012, and then all of a sudden it's like we got like two, maybe one.
Yeah, and then there apparently was a 4D theme park ride that was all over the country for a while.
That was weird.
In addition to like other theme park rides in other countries, it had its own musical a couple years ago.
Everything has its own musical at this point.
Yes.
SpongeBob SquarePants, the Broadway musical.
Has SpongeBob been on ice?
I would imagine so. It has to have been. A giant sponge on ice seems like the best thing ever and very safe. But this always just makes me want to go back to like how much of the stuff that we've covered actually have musicals?
A lot.
Actually.
And it's always the greatest thing. I love it. I was like reading up on it. Like the musical was like a flop. People didn't go see it.
I feel like most musicals are flops.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too late. Like it came out in, I think, 2015. 2015 is too late to kind of capitalize on that train.
Oh, yeah. If it didn't come out in like 2002.
Yeah, I think they've been a lot more profitable. In terms of profit, so I was looking at it's SpongeBob SquarePants is one of the most profitable media franchises at $14 billion in revenue. Which is closing in on The Simpsons, actually.
Oh, wow.
Despite The Simpsons' 10-year head start.
Inflation, though. I'll argue that one because in 1994 versus, like, 2004, like, there's a huge, massive gap of, like, everybody, people get rich and a lot of people get poorer in that time frame.
This is why I included here that the only media franchises to have more money since 1999 are Dora, Disney Princesses, Call of Duty, Cars, and the MCU.
Hey, this is why Adrian's better than Kate.
Dora the Explorer!
How the hell is Dora the Explorer on there?
Because of...
Dora's media merchandising?
I think they were saying it was the gross net of, like, majority... of GDP of, like, fucking small countries is what brown people spend in this country, and they love
basically,
them some Dora.
So basically, Dora people go, they get their Explorer on, they lose their Explorer and have to go buy a new one.
Yep. Well, actually, I say that as having left my Barney in like a Walmart one time and my grandma went and bought me a new one. But like, yes.
Yeah, I only mention this just because like the only things during that same time period to beat it are basically like Disney, Call of Duty, and Dora.
I love that Dora's
and
in there.
This is just like an animated TV show. Like the rest of this...
The sad part is I still don't understand Cars either. People love that thing.
I don't understand Cars. That I don't understand.
Man, it's crazy.
No, I'm talking about like I don't even get the movies either. Like
the first movie's pretty good.
The first movie's like okay.
Goddamn
I mean,
terrible.
That's what I'm saying. Like I get the first movie, but then there's like six.
I
of them,
just
there?
Liked Larry the Cable Guy's car in the first movie, but I understand nothing else.
Yeah. So in terms of rankings, like as we usually do, it was kind of hard to find rankings kind of on this, just because whenever you look at these lists, you always get like anime thrown into it, and that's just like a whole other ball game.
Oh,
in my opinion.
It shouldn't be included at all.
Yeah, if you're just looking at just like animation in terms of, you know, basic cable animation stuff, Ranker has it at number 4 all time, but this other site, IndieWire, I think it is.
IndieWire.
Had one really, really recently, like as of November 20th, and it had SpongeBob at like 33 out of 50, but that included things like Cowboy Bebop and like BoJack Horseman and like a whole bunch of other stuff too. So
what was number 1, 2, and 3 on Ranker then?
Simpsons? I mean, let me find it.
Because even hard, because if we include BoJack Horseman, I feel like you need to include the Simpsons.
Yeah.
I feel like those demographics are the same.
Yeah, like that's the hard thing when it comes to like if you look at animation, because you have to segment it based on like audience.
Yeah, exactly. So like, this has Looney Tunes, The Simpsons, Tom and Jerry, and then SpongeBob. And then, you know, on this list, two top 10, Futurama, Family Guy, South Park.
Yeah.
That's a weird list.
Batman. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of hard to find.
I mean, it's a good list, but it's a weird list because, like I said, Simpsons and Looney Tunes are... Yeah,
it's tough to place it. It's in the conversation, right. I would say, like, you know, top 50 all time.
Oh, I could agree with that.
Yeah.
But despite its popularity, it's definitely not without its controversies. So early on in its inception, so in... 2000, the early 2000s, so 2002 to 2005, there's multiple conservative and Christian groups calling SpongeBob out for promoting homosexual agenda for SpongeBob and Patrick's friendship. And a lot of this stemmed from there being a SpongeBob as one of the stars in a music video in 2005 that was sent to 61,000 schools by the We Are Family Foundation that was designed to encourage tolerance and diversity. And one right-wing Christian group thought it promoted homosexuality.
So
this is...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go for it.
I was going to say, so is this before or after the episode where SpongeBob and Patrick take care of a clam together?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's one of my favorites.
Because, I think it's stupid, like, for anybody to, like, go after a fucking cartoon like this. But like that was clearly like they were two men and a baby.
There were two men and a baby.
Yep.
Yeah, this was season 3, so it would have had to have been in that same time frame.
Yeah, that was definitely the same time frame.
But Hillenburg was like largely quiet on a lot of this stuff, except until that group came out in 2005 saying that like Hillenburg was trying to promote his homosexual agenda and like make our kids like gay and all this stuff. And he basically was just like very upfront and just said he was quoted as saying, "It doesn't have anything to do with what we're trying to do. We never intended them to be gay. I consider them to be almost asexual. We're just trying to be funny, and this has got nothing to do with the show." So basically, he was like, "Shut the hell up!" Like, almost all of the characters on my show are asexual. Yeah, so he was kind of like, "Nah, y'all just crazy people. Let two men and a baby take care of a clam."
Two men and a baby take care of a clam.
That is the premise of an episode. Like, SpongeBob goes off to work and comes back. It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
No, SpongeBob's Patrick the housewife, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Patrick is a terrible working father.
Yes, and SpongeBob is a housewife. He has, like the French maid, like, outfit thing, too.
Yeah, it's
great.
It's really good.
Especially, oh, and then, like, there's that Patrick, that it's a gif. But like Patrick, where he has like the super, super long legs and the fishnets and high heels.
Yeah, I can see that one too, for sure. Yeah, but Hillenburg has like come out multiple times saying that he sees most of the characters on the show as asexual, since none of them ever really are ever together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like none of them are ever really dating at any point.
Because I know, I know that I read something, and obviously, like, this is people reading in onto it, because, like, if the creator says that that's one thing, or, like, that's kind of it, but I know what's been read onto it is not necessarily the fact that, like, if you, like, exclude fucking Tumblr people, or, sorry, if you exclude, like, you know, just, like, shipping and stuff that happens, and that's, like, its own little world that I don't like going into, but a lot of the praise that I've seen coming from, like, or coming for SpongeBob and, like, lifting it up is that they're on none of the characters. They're, like, how do I say it? Like, there are no gendered roles, really, on any of the characters. Like, they all kind of just behave in whatever way they want to behave.
It's a starfish and a sponge.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
I don't think they are assigned anything.
Kind of stemming from there, we have some other controversy. So in that same year, in 2005, SpongeBob was linked by this one study that SpongeBob was linked to the rise of childhood obesity.
Totally believe it.
Because of all of, like, all the stuff that SpongeBob and Patrick eat in terms of sweets.
Totally it.
Don't give your kids sweets. That's how you fix that.
Yeah.
You tell them to go outside and run around in circles. Run
just
laps.
Don't give them the thing in the first place.
And then you have Fox News and Friends said that the show pushed a climate change agenda on unproven science.
They do cover climate change.
They live in the ocean.
Yeah.
The ocean is dying.
Yeah.
Then you have the American Academy of Pediatrics published a study that said that the show ruins kids' concentration because of the fast-paced changing scenes.
So that's actually cognitively proven that the way we intake our media does affect our attention spans. They've done cognitive tests on it.
We're all freaking birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, it's not SpongeBob's
fault.
It's a lot of
it's SpongeBob and every childhood television show that's watched, but people do it because it's like
it's a popular thing out.
Essentially like colors. As you see it works, it gets pushed more to fast pace, so you can get more put in, and then like it just accelerates and then it's like a snowball.
So take your kids outside in the woods. Take them to the ocean. Make them run laps.
And then, finally, the other interesting one I found was Hillenburg was actually sued in 2007 by Troy Walker, who said that he stole the character SpongeBob from his 1991 comic strip, Bob Sponge, the Unemployed Sponge, which is essentially like him drawing a sponge with like some googly eyes on it. And
Is he Doodle Bob?
No, it's not even Doodle Bob. It's not even like that close.
Which Doodle Bob was terrifying.
Yeah. He wanted $1.6 billion in damages.
Oh, God.
But the matter was dropped in 2008 after the court granted defendant's motion for summary judgment. So we really don't know where that went from there. But the guy wanted $1.6 billion in damages.
They had to have settled then. He got some money.
Settled something. He got something. I don't think he got $1.6 billion, though.
No, he got money.
Yeah. And then just some other more positive facts to kind of show the popularity and show the reach. So in 2009, SpongeBob was the first animated character to receive a statue entirely made out of wax for Madame Tussauds in London, which I thought was interesting. Like, they hadn't had one before, SpongeBob.
Kind of disappointing that, actually.
In 2011, a mushroom was named after SpongeBob. I added that in there because Matt always talks about things being named after stuff.
They are. I'm telling you, look it up.
And then after the Egyptian Revolution of 2011, SpongeBob became a fashion phenomenon, appearing on various items of merchandise from hijabs to boxer shorts. The phenomenon led to the creation of the Tumblr project called SpongeBob on the Nile. The phenomenon has even spread to Libya, where a Libyan rebel in SpongeBob dress was photographed celebrating the revolution.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. Although The Guardian and Vice has asserted that the trend has little to no political significance, a joke, presidential campaigns have been undertaken for SpongeBob in Egypt and Syria.
The only time I had money to study abroad was when everybody went to, like, we were supposed to go to Damascus for the Arabic program, and then they shut it down, and I never had money to go abroad again.
Well, you missed the SpongeBob Revolution.
I was supposed to go there for Christmas and New Year's.
And then a clip in 2013 showed up of a Russian army and navy singing the theme song, which apparently is one of the most popular marching songs in Russia.
That is so interesting.
And as we talked about kind of at the beginning, one of the biggest source of memes on the internet comes from SpongeBob, but many of the memes have been used in events like March for Our Lives earlier this year to represent NRA and gun control rights. There's a whole bunch of those memes where they had signs that are pretty, pretty good. Kind of just overarching, like, I think SpongeBob is a rare form of entertainment that has something to offer, like, every subset of viewers. And I think a lot of that stems from Hillenburg's characters he was able to create and flesh out, which will take us to some of But Why Though for characters and kind of like just the kind of overarching lessons that come out of SpongeBob. For this, I wanted to do kind of like in-depth character studies of all the characters and kind of like their flaws and stuff, but that would have taken way longer than the time we
had. So I do have a question, though.
Yes.
So a lot, I don't know if it's true or not, but now that you've told me like the background of the guy, I think like on the internet a lot, they say that like Bikini Bottom is supposed to be like the Bikini Atoll incident where like the nuclear bomb went off and like the like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of the fan theories of why everything is there so weird. So yeah, but it wasn't right confirmed. There's a whole... Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was never, like, outwardly confirmed by Hillenburg from what I could find, unless someone can correct me, like, on Twitter.
Yeah.
But everyone kind of just accepts that as true to make sense of all of the things that happened in SpongeBob. And it just makes sense.
Yeah, because he's a marine biologist, yeah.
Yeah, sure. He's a marine biologist, so he's right, automatically.
It's not that hard. Everybody's a marine biologist. Never mind. Go watch the Seinfeld episode of Marine Biologist.
So, for the characters, like, while there are many innuendos that we can see now as kind of older people, lots of one-liners, like SpongeBob saying, or Patrick saying, is mayonnaise an instrument, the countless musical numbers that they have, and it's just general humor. I think SpongeBob, at its heart, is about its characters. So... like Matt talked about earlier when he was mentioning Magic School Bus, like SpongeBob isn't the Magic School Bus and it's not Sesame Street. There aren't like inherent lessons built in or really even advertised. But with that said, yeah.
I was going to say the fun thing is I don't like Sesame Street, but I really like the Magic School Bus.
Yeah, I mean, I think just different age groups. I don't think Sesame Street and Magic School Bus have necessarily the same...
No, they don't.
...demographics. Because I grew out of Sesame Street real...
I never liked it at early. All.
I like it. I like Elmo. Elmo's my homie.
Really?
I had Reading Rainbow and the Magic School Bus were the two that I watched all the time. Oh, and Wishbone.
Yeah, I was gonna put Reading Rainbow in here, but I was like, it's not really anime. So I didn't know if I would put it in. But it's like that kind of like PBS learning, right?
Yeah.
It's,
and SpongeBob is episodic, not serialized, right?
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, these things are episodic too, but yeah.
I was like, you watch Magic School Bus. It's definitely not.
Yeah, no, it's episodic. It's not. Yeah, it's not serialized at all.
Watched it like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. So, with all this said, like at least when I watched it when I was younger, or whatever the case is, I think SpongeBob was able to get across like just basic important human values without hitting you over the head with kind of like just don't be a dick. With like a whole kind of like, you know, this is what we learned today kind of thing that you might get out of something like Sesame Street.
Like you don't have like a monologue from the main character at the end telling you why you shouldn't do something.
Yeah. And though, you know, this isn't Dora the Explorer, you know, either where they're kind of leading kids through that. It's really just about the characters and you get what you want out of the characters, whether that is happiness or just realizing that your depression is real, like whatever the case is, you can get those things out of characters. And even though the title character SpongeBob is kind of like this happy and naive character, not everyone even identifies with that. So that there's different characters at different points, people can identify with him differently. And many people argue like after the fifth or sixth season that the show suffers from Flander. I hate this word so much. Flanderization.
Ned Flanders.
Yeah. From like how Ned Flanders is just like the same kind of thing the whole time, but I'm not sure if I really agree with that too much, but that might just be like nostalgia talking from the first four or five seasons or from there, because even if there are aspects of Flanderization, like if SpongeBob is just like the happy character, if Patrick is just like the dumb character, each of the characters deals with like an opposite force and they have to kind of deal with those aspects of their personality on a regular basis, And I think that really boils down to, if we kind of look at this with two main characters, I think it boils down to SpongeBob and Squidward, since they're opposite forces and they're very often like acting opposite of each other, to kind of get this across. So SpongeBob is relentlessly optimistic, enthusiastic, and naive. His character from Hillenburg, he said that he was influenced by Jerry Lewis, Pee Wee Herman, and Stan Laurel to give SpongeBob his traits. And identifying with SpongeBob is usually kind of like living in the moment, sharing joy with others, optimism in the face of negativity, persistence in the things that you love, and kind of like never losing that piece of your childhood, because it's okay to be different. And those are all things you can get out of SpongeBob's characters, regardless of kind of like how naive and
stupid.
I was gonna say it's funny, like I've never seen like SpongeBob, like I've seen him as like this joyous person, but it's like joyous to his own detriment, in the same way that Squidward is like depressed to his own detriment. Like SpongeBob slacks off so much. Like you have the boat driving episode, and then on top of that you have the one where he has to write the paper and he spends like 10 hours writing the word "the," which is like it was one of those things where like when I watched it, I saw SpongeBob as somebody who was extremely optimistic and happy, but to the point where he like had no idea what was happening around him. And then like Sandy was like the balance between SpongeBob and Squidward to a point, because she's just kind of like, what the hell are you even doing?
Yeah, even Sandy has like problems with like her pride and such. Mm-hmm. And then we have Squidward, who's actually not even a squid. He's an octopus, but they draw him with six legs because Hillenburg said it was just easier to do it that way. He's arrogant, curt, the depressed neighbor, and his traits and people who usually identify with Squidward later on, which has been like the case for millennials, it seems, is, you know, his kind of "I hate everything and everyone" attitude as he goes through like a mundane work life, while his passion projects, art and music, have basically failed, and he kind of just is just depressed and kind of hates everything and everybody.
I actually really like, I think you're right, the like, I don't even know if it's just a millennial thing, but just like I feel bad for Squidward, because like people just keep bugging him. Like, he does not want to hang out with SpongeBob, and SpongeBob just keeps bugging him, and I feel bad for the man.
I don't.
I feel so bad for him. SpongeBob just needs to leave him alone.
So, we really kind of get, like, this balancing of perspectives whenever these two characters are in the similar situations. So, it's really kind of like SpongeBob optimism versus Squidward's pessimism. So, for reference, I guess, Matt, SpongeBob and Squidward work at the exact same job every day, but SpongeBob loves it, Squidward hates it. SpongeBob like enjoys doing his hobbies like bubble blowing and jelly fishing, and Squidward wishes he could only do his hobbies. So whereas SpongeBob kind of like finds that balance of being able to do his hobbies, Squidward just wants to play clarinet and
paint. Okay, I mean, how smart he's not do you good have at them. To be to do bubble blowing as a hobby?
Yeah, I'm like, Squidward is a cultured person. He plays an instrument.
He doesn't even play the instrument that much. You've seen the first episode is about bubble blowing, and Pat and SpongeBob blows an elephant.
Wow.
Squidward can't even blow a bubble. He couldn't even blow a bubble. That,
the cool thing is that Squidward also makes like a lot of literary note, like literary things. Like Squidward is definitely the dude who went to grad school and is just like really over people messing with him and succeeding when the other person's done like nothing, which is like how I see Squidward and SpongeBob.
I think it's just
not
differences of, I mean, if you wanted to,
if somebody said I want to play the clarinet versus I want to blow some bubbles, I want to save the guy that wants to blow bubbles needs help.
So like, even away from that, like both whatever hobby you hobby is valid, but like,
no, if you blow bubbles, I'm not considering that a hobby.
I guess I'm just kind of like, why is it a problem that Squidward just wants to do his hobbies? Like Squidward just wants to be left alone.
Oh, because he doesn't
and do
because he doesn't try. He kind of just wallows in his self.
He can't try because SpongeBob is like knocking on his door every 5 minutes.
No, he does. When he does try, he fails, and then he can't take criticism of him not being a good whatever. Oh, and then you have the episode where SpongeBob does like that masterful sculpture,
mm-hmm.
and Squidward's is terrible.
I think it, for me, though, I see it, like, as an Archer moment, where, like, Squidward's like, I have been practicing to do this for so long, and then this jerk comes around who's done it, like, never and does it right. I feel like it's a Lana and Archer moment. Like, why is this happening?
Because he's not actually a squid. To me, like, when I was, like, thinking of kind of comparisons, just because we've done the BoJack episode pretty recently, I see a lot of the relationship of kind of, like, BoJack versus, like, Todd or Mr. Peanut Butter, where, like, they both learn from each other kind of just in different ways.
I can see Mr. Peanut Butter. I don't really see Todd.
Todd, in different aspects of different episodes.
Todd's character's been really weird over the last four seasons.
Yeah, it's like, I would say, like, more like early Todd, more than kind of... Okay. Like, early Todd when BoJack messes with Todd, and then BoJack realizes that, hey, maybe I shouldn't have messed with Todd, because, like, that makes me kind of an asshole.
That's fair. Even though Todd is just, like, basically his Kate play of SpongeBob, Todd is no help and is actually a terrible friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, like, early Todd. Or you can just go with Mr. Peanut Butter.
Mr. Peanut Butter, he's, I think,
not,
probably
Mr. Peanut he's not trying to run for governor.
Like, Mr. Peanut Butter just kind of falls into things.
Yeah.
Also, that happy-go-lucky that I have no idea where I'm at or what's going on.
Yeah, Patrick is probably more Todd than Mr. Peanut Butter, in my opinion. Patrick's just useless.
I put Andor, man. I'm sorry. So, like, while Squidward's depression is, like, super real, there's, like, very few moments in any of the episodes, like, where he tries to get out of that. He kind of just goes to his job every day and, like, hates everything. There's very few episodes, like, where he actually tries to do something other than what he's been doing for the last 20 years. But in the moments that he does show signs of kind of getting out of, like, that mindset, it's usually through the help of SpongeBob. They kind of get him there through his kind of, like, just general happiness. Ultimately, like, as annoying as SpongeBob is for Squidward, there are times where SpongeBob rubs off on Squidward and seems to be things that kind of get him out of his depression and have him relive that, like, little kid inside. So episodes like Idiot Box or Just One Bite or The Bubble Stand, or even, like, when he leaves and goes to Squidville and realizes, like, hey, this sucks. Like, I'm around all these cultured squids and I don't like any of them. So I'm going to go back and hang out with Patrick and SpongeBob.
That was a really good episode.
In that same vein, SpongeBob, who is always happy, seems to crash very hard when sadness hits him. Like Kate was talking about earlier, he's, like, very sad. He's always very happy, but it could be to his detriment because he can't deal with those really hard moments. And in those moments, ironically enough, it's usually Squidward who kind of comforts him and gets him out of those moments, even if he's, like, the one who caused it at times. So it shows that, like, even being super happy all the time can lead to big fails and big falls if you don't have coping strategies to deal with it. So things like the pizza delivery episode when they go through that whole ordeal to get to the end and they deliver the pizza and that guy gets mad because he doesn't have his soda and slams it in his face, and then Squidward goes and trying to make the situation better. Then you have, like, the April Fool's episode where Squidward basically embarrasses the shit of SpongeBob and kind of realizes, hey, maybe I shouldn't have done that, and they kind of go back and he realizes, hey, maybe I shouldn't be such a kind of asshole, and they kind of offset each other in that way.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately, like, in a world where everyone feels like a Squidward, I know I feel like a Squidward way too much lately, I think we got to find that, like, SpongeBob, or at least, like, that kind of balance of the two, so maybe, like, a Sandy Cheeks-ish kind of thing, even though she has her own issues, where, like, we can all have spouts of depression, and living through those things can usually turn you into a cynical, angry, not squid octopus. But, like, with the help of just general optimism or just adventures of delivering pizzas, you can kind of get out of that dark place, at least even for a moment, you know, like an 11-minute episode, to kind of offset how you're feeling, knowing that you don't always have to feel that way. And the reverse is true too. You don't have to always be happy. And if you're always happy, you have to make sure that you're developing things to kind of get you back to being happy once you're not happy.
Yeah, because, like, that's one of the things that, like, I think is probably one of the biggest problems that I see with a lot of our culture is, like, really preaching this, like, heavy optimism, like, oh, nothing's bad ever happened to me, I can't, like, this is fine, I'm extremely happy. And then the moment something does happen, because, like, not everything will go your way, the moment something doesn't go your way, you, like, having people, like, completely shut down, like SpongeBob does, because they just live in this sunny world. and not knowing how to actually cope and come out of that, in my opinion, is more dangerous, because I think in a lot of ways, like, people who, like, deal with, like, down stuff, they know how to deal with it. But at the same time, like, I think you're, like, right on the money that, like, there needs to be a balance between, like, seeing the two, because, like, both extremes have, like, really bad consequences, because, like, I don't know, when I get depressed, I kind of don't have an option of sitting in my house for 5 days. Like, I have to get up and I have to go do stuff, and, like, I have, like a, I think, like, people talk about, like, when you've been with depression for so much, you have, like, this functioning depression, because you know how to do it, and then you have people who have never had it or had to deal with that stuff, that, like, the moment it happens, then, like, they're completely out of commission for, like, a really long time, and it sometimes affects them worse. So, like, I think just healthy strategies in both areas are extremely needed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when it comes to, like, those two characters, even though, I don't know, I just think they play off each other very well. And going back and rewatching it, so we, Stefani and I, went back and rewatched a few of the episodes after we found out about Hillenburg's passing. And I just see them in such a different light now when I go watch them, just having, you know, 20 more years of, like, life experiences to go through it. It is very, very different. I mean, we can go into all day about, like, the dangers of the rest of the characters, Flanderization personalities, bunny quotes, because there's, like, that theory that each of the characters represents, like, a seven deadly sin, and so you can talk about, like, the dangers of greed with Mr. Krabs, pride with Sandy, sloth with Patrick, envy with Plankton, but I really think the heart of the show is with SpongeBob and Patrick, as they're the characters who appear most often together, mm-hmm. despite, you know, Patrick being kind of his buddy. Squidward actually shows up more than Patrick does.
So who are the main two characters?
I mean, the main character is SpongeBob, and it usually flips between Patrick or Squidward.
So you're talking about, so is it SpongeBob and Squidward are the main two characters who appear the most?
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or has more screen time,
that makes sense.
I guess. I mean, Patrick's probably there with, you know, and vice versa. I think Squidward's had, like, more of his own episodes, like Squidville, yeah. where Patrick really doesn't kind of have those episodes kind of on his
own. I think, like, Patrick usually just serves as, like, a vehicle for something versus, like, actually, like, doing things, yeah. which is, like, what I think you're right. Like, SpongeBob and Squidward do things the most, and Patrick's just kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just, and they have, like, 11 episodes, which Squidward actually references multiple times. He's, like, the fourth ball breaker in the show, so it works out really well in terms of characters. Any other thoughts on characters, Kate, that you might want to talk about?
No, not at all. Like, you covered all the things I like to talk about with this show.
Awesome. Maybe one day in, you know, another episode, we can talk about kind of like Sandy and like her importance and kind of Mr. Krabs and Plankton, because they're a whole nother dichotomy to talk about. But only so much time, because I do want to, if we're a pop culture podcast, we got to talk about the memes. Because I can't think of a show that's been made into more memes than SpongeBob. Like, maybe The Office.
Yeah, probably The Office.
But even then, it's kind of, I don't know if they are at the same range of different scenes. I don't know. But it's apparent, like, they were in this 90s cartoon meme nostalgia wave with things like Arthur and Dexter. But just SpongeBob just seems to be around more than all of those. And I think it just really SpongeBob, it stems from a couple things. I think mainly it's been around for almost 20 years. And we have a whole bunch of people who grew up watching it now have the ability to make their own memes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go with that over the other ones. Because, I mean, this one came out in 1999. So, I mean, in theory, you're right. Yeah. Few months off from being a 2000 cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's because the characters are just so distinct in their personalities that they're just very memeable.
Yeah.
Memeable is a
That's
word,
fair.
I think it is, actually.
Yeah.
I've used it before.
So meme
for a word.
Yeah, so meme is actually an academic term.
Yeah. I just didn't know if, like, memeable. It didn't give me a squiggly thing. I was like, all right, cool.
We're good. I've used the word memeable before.
Yeah, I've said it before. Meme is so a, like, word, so, and mimetic.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah, okay.
Memeable should be.
Meme.
Steamed and official. The academic Amazing. Told us yes.
The GIFs. So we're all about the GIFs.
Oh, no, Matt. No. Don't bring that
Stop.
Here.
Stop. Stop. That's the one time the creator's wrong. So, like, all the characters are memeable, and the episodes have just had weird application to multiple events. So, like I said, they had, you know, during the march, there was a lot of the Muse there. But, you know, things like the I'll have you know I've only cried for 20 minutes meme, the morbid Squidward, the push it somewhere else Patrick meme, the time card. So like the one
time
card
we have actually used in our episodes and our Patreon episodes whenever there is bickering or we go on a tangent and I can't cut it to make it sound like it goes together. I put in the 3 hours later thing.
See, that works. The mocking SpongeBob one, which is probably one of the biggest ones right now. The confused Mr. Krabs. The savage / evil Patrick one that gets real weird real quick.
Great.
It's so bad. I hate it.
The SpongeBob hype or like crowd one. SpongeGar. Krusty Krabs versus the Chum Bucket. And then the tired SpongeBob one where he has no pants. Are just ones that I can think of like off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's just more and more applications of just these people who've known SpongeBob forever. I don't think I can scroll through one. Yeah. So many good ones. Just so many good ones. And I don't know if SpongeBob hemp pants has anything to do with why people are so like if in the early days of the internet. Like if that
the great days of the internet.
Yeah, like where the internet was real weird.
It was
SpongeBob
a shit
hemp
show.
Pants
it was
amazing. was a very interesting thing. I don't know if you want to link any of that in the show notes. Yeah.
I wouldn't link it. I wouldn't link anything older than 2010 in the show notes these days. People are gonna deem that offensive and cry.
Know what SpongeBob hemp pants was, just give it by the name. And I'm pretty sure you can figure out what this parody is about, but it's basically a giant just meme of SpongeBob, and I don't know if that helps it be relevant.
It's like an entire series. Like, they put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, and I know that MTV, I think MTV is the one who owns Nickelodeon, right?
I think so.
So they used to play SpongeBob on MTV in like the later 2000s, so that might have helped it keep in relevance to become this kind of like meme sensation it is now, but the memes are very real when it comes to SpongeBob. Yeah. Probably even more so now that Steven Hillenburg is gone. They're kind of like might be his lasting legacy.
I think the confused Mr. Krabs still goes around everywhere, like naked SpongeBob. Like, I don't know. Like, I still see people using those. Like, they're past, like, their peak moments, but, like, people still use them. I never want to go back to...
SpongeBob's always huge on Twitter.
Yeah. And I never want to go back to Evil Patrick heyday, because that was... Evil Patrick is so bad.
Is amazing.
You think, SpongeBob Hemp Pants is basically nothing but savage Evil Patrick.
It is.
If you want some reference.
It's awful.
And it's all on YouTube, so go enjoy
that
on YouTube. But that's really all I got. We're at about an hour, and that's kind of... I didn't want to keep people here forever. So we have some fan, but why those? Not very many, but we'll get through them real quick. So we have at Gatsu083, one of our... Yes, Charles. SpongeBob is unmitigated joy. He sees the best in everything and is always enthusiastic to help. The Band Geeks episode has to be... the fave, so many great jokes, and the song at the end is the best. I guess we didn't talk about that too, that there's like this whole, I don't even know what the petition's at now, of like the thousands and thousands of people who want them to play the SpongeBob halftime show during the Super Bowl this year, which I signed.
I want it.
Because I think you should
I'd
do
be
it.
Down for that.
Better than
it
half the other halftime shows.
So you can play that shit on loop for 30 minutes and it'll be better than what we're going to get, I'm pretty sure.
Probably.
So, we also have Nico, the Auror. I could probably write an entire dissertation, but just for the sake of the 280 character limit, the show will forever be one of the greatest of all time. It gave us one of the most iconic lines in television history. Is mayonnaise an instrument? also from the halftime episode, where they literally, Matt, they literally bust them up into, like, they're literally playing a halftime
so
show.
Good.
And they, like, they raise them in a big giant dome into, like, a stadium of actual people. It's very weird.
It's so good.
We have at Dr. Ragnarok. As long as I've been alive, people have always accused me of being a kid, but Steven Hillenburg proved to me that that's okay. SpongeBob has helped me through a lot of hard times and taught me that friendship is the most important thing. I will always be grateful for that. We have at Pilots and Petards, because it was really my first cartoon for kids that grown-ups can enjoy. I was the target demo for Toy Story, but it was fun for my parents too. SpongeBob is my TS, the subtlety subversive cartoon that rewarded you for being smart and paying attention. I saw the first movie in theaters. So did I.
By the way, Mr. Peabody and Sherman reward you for being smart.
Oh, yes, it does. It's so good.
Yeah, I agree with all of our favorite why those, especially the one that you're paying attention. If you have not watched SpongeBob again as a grown person, I would go watch it so you can be like, whoa, I miss this innuendo, or whoa, I identify with Patrick, when I didn't think I actually would. That's really all I got. I like SpongeBob. All of my friends like SpongeBob. Like, if we start singing the Campfire song, I'm pretty sure it would break out into a whole song and dance.
So is Matt not your friend?
I know, that's all I got out of that.
Well, I can show you the Campfire song. Well, Matt would be Squidward, where I would go, Matt, and then Matt wouldn't sing. So it fits in actually perfectly. So it works.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's all I really got. Final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I really appreciate it. I definitely think that SpongeBob is a cartoon that you get a lot more out of Whitney, and like you said, Adrian, there's a reason that, like, the target demographic is actually way older than who's watching it. Or I guess not target demographic, but, like, the largest viewing demographic is larger than the target, is because it just really resonates, and it's smart comedy in the guise of really stupid comedy. Especially when you pick up on a lot of the darker notes that are there, which I know he said he was going away from darkness, but I think that there's, like, it's a really good balance between, like, some really, really dark points, as well as just some, like, sheer optimism. So I appreciate Hillenburg and everything he did to kind of bring SpongeBob into the world. So that's my final thought.
Matt, are you going to go make your own show about anthropomorphic plants? I don't even know if that even works.
Anthropomorphic plants? It should be able to. Little Shop of Horrors.
I mean, technically, a sponge is technically a living organism, even though that one's obviously not that type of sponge. But
anthropomorphic just means making them human. It doesn't mean...
Okay. Basically.
Are we getting our... Are you going to make a TV show?
No, I'm not going to make no TV show. You guys don't deserve a TV show. Nobody deserves a TV show. But no, as far as, like, actually wrapping up... I don't know. I've tried it. Like I said, I've watched multiple episodes before. I've just never gotten into it. I just don't understand it. People love it. I'm sure it's great. Obviously, it's won a lot of things. It's definitely not my cup of tea. I'm sure in this day and age, I'm like a horrible person because I don't like something. I don't care. I probably will never ever watch the whole entire thing, especially if there's 8 seasons and people only reference the first 3. I watch a lot of cartoons, but this will not be one of them.
But you just said that you were going to go back and give it a try.
I might.
You said that at the beginning of the episode. What did Adrian do to make you not want to give it a try now? Is it because he called you not his friend?
Oh, no, everybody just tried to remind me of all these other TV shows that, like, are probably way better at what they do than this one.
Okay.
Okay.
Adrian, you want to close us out? After that? You want to bring it around town to some happiness?
We can bring it around town.
I mean, I was trying to do fine, but then Kate hit an ass thing. I mean, I can redo this again. No, SpongeBob's okay. Important to the people, and to the people alone. There will be another movie that we probably do not actually need, but people will care about because nostalgia. And I'm glad it touched so many lives. It didn't touch mine. The majority of this stuff. I hope you guys sleep better at night knowing this cartoon touched your lives and you feel better. I'm glad it was great. I don't understand it. Have a good one.
Can you go back and say it again, but like with a more nasally voice? Just to see how it plays. Like, screw it. No, I mean, I think that this was... I think SpongeBob deserves its kind of own episode, so I'm glad we got to do it. Obviously, it's not like the... it's not like this heavy-hitting impact that we see with, like, Stan Lee or with, like, Jap Kirby or as in-depth as a character analysis as, like, a BoJack Horseman or kind of even, like, as an Archer. But its presence today, I think, means something... Even if it's just memes now, those are things that are still being used. And it all really just stems from Steven Hillenburg, a guy who liked to draw and liked the ocean and wanted to share that with people. And that's why, and that's what we have here. We have this $14 billion franchise going on 20 years that basically anyone in our demographic knows. And it all starts there.
By the way, if you've never seen a SpongeBob pinata made by Mexicans, they're always great. And horrible at the same time.
Nightmare fuel.
They're so bad. Like, the little Mexican shops that sell piñatas around here, they're always, like, just terrifying. It's the nose.
The best ones are the half-melted ice cream SpongeBob bars.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good,
too. The eyeballs, like, falling out.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway. As always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can find me at Oh My Myth Randir. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperRuiz93, SuperRuiz93.
Matt?
You can find me juicing some pineapple for pineapple juice.
Why are you destroying his house?
Because I love pineapple juice. And actual pineapple juice, not that crap pineapple cocktail.
Oh my God.